Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the middle.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shkeli. Aldi. Million rubli.
Tribe spoke. Tribe spoke.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe spoke.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of International Survivor. I am your host, Shannon Gus, here to talk about some off-season coverage, here to dig deep into what is a good social game. That's like a buzz sentence. We talk about, oh, well, they had a good social game. What does that mean? That's too vague for me, clearly. So someone came to me with his thoughts from two seasons of playing the game of what he's seen and how this plays out very specifically, and I love that. So with that in mind, please welcome a man of many nicknames, someone who is a great friend of the podcast, Survivor All-Star Dirty Harry Hills. Harry, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. And thank you for indulging me just like messaging you out of the blue and like just turning it into a podcast.
Well, Harry, like, you know that if someone's like, I have this idea about Survivor social strategy, like, I'm listening. I'm not doing much else anyway, but even if I was, like, I would be listening.
Yeah, I think this is like stemming out of like just missing Survivor, basically, because I've been like thinking probably way too much about it in the time since. And like just for everyone at home, like basically I messaged Shannon out of the blue because I was reading things online and like you basically see things about social game and people say things like, oh, Pierre had a good social game. David had a good social game. And it's just all very vague. And I wanted to kind of like actually talk through why people are good at social game.
Especially because Pierre and David are like such different players. Like you wouldn't put them into the same category of player, of play style or anything, but we would both very broadly say they have a good social game. So what does that mean? And I think here we've kind of come up with some categories and we'll talk everyone through it at first because they probably don't know what we're doing and it's good to kind of catch them up on where we're at before we have the discussion. But I think it's good to drill down and then hopefully in the future of analyzing social games, instead of just very broadly saying they have a good social game, we'll be able to say, but here's what they're doing well within it. And then for anyone who's maybe going on to play Survivor or anything like that, they can kind of look at their social game more distinctly. What are they good at? What are they bad at? And what can they kind of work with within that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really important at the very start to sort of like define those little things we're going to talk about. And then as well as that, sort of preface this by saying everything is quite fluid and context-based. Like that's the key to social gaming. Like it is fluid. Like things can change very quickly. But I think we have a pretty strong thing here. As we've sort of talked about before, I think that like there's some things out there that talk about like archetypes and things like that. People might be used to that term. But this kind of goes a little bit in a different direction to that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me set it out for the listeners. Let them catch up on our kind of like couple of weeks of talking about it. And it's funny because like we're very much in this now. Like we have like a system that we understand and I'm just hoping other people understand it. We've tried to like streamline it to make it somewhat understandable to everyone else. But basically here's what we want to do is we want to talk about, okay, the social game. What is a good social game? So Harry has come up with a list of what we're not calling archetypes because we felt that was a little bit too shoehorned in. we're calling them play styles. And the reason that we kind of wanted to change that term is because it's things that you can pick and choose from. It is things that certain type of players might lean towards and might in some cases lean extremely towards, but we don't feel that it's mostly ever kind of just that one thing. You can pick and choose from a couple, you can evolve as the game goes on. So we kind of want to outline the play styles that Harry has come up with. And then we come up with a few dualities and like major sectors that we want to then plot out. Where do these play styles fit? Where do certain players from Survivor and Australian Survivor history fit? And how do you kind of go about these sectors in the game? What are the pros? What are the cons? So those dualities are passive gameplay and active gameplay, genuine social relationships and fake social relationships, internal and external gameplay, which is something that's a bit unique that we'll talk about, and then identity versus relationships. So again, it sounds like a lot. We're going to talk through it in depth, but I think this kind of thing is so important because, as you said, you've been reading about it, and it's the kind of thing that it gets at us analyzers, because it'll surprise us, because it's a hard thing to see the social game. It's probably the hardest tenet of the three, strategic, social, and physical, to actually see on the screen. So something will happen where, like, you know, Aubrey beats Michelle. For a while, people didn't understand it because what we were getting back was, well, Michelle had a good social game. But no one knows what that means. That's not something we talk about. That's so vague. So if we get something like this, we could drill down on, and this is what was so good about it. The same way we drill down on very specific strategic moves, on specific types of physical gameplay, we want to be able to set up social games so that it's at least a little bit more understandable, so we can kind of analyze it better as we go through analyzing the show in the future.
I think that's sort of like a really important thing to actually point out, is the disconnect between what goes on the TV and what actually happens in real life. Like, because social game is the thing that they have to try and manage to articulate over to the screen. And it's just so, so difficult, because when you're actually playing Survivor, it's 24 hours a day where you can like do a little thing that doesn't really look cool on camera. Like if you offered up like a little bit of your food extra to someone, or gave them your water bottle or stuff like that, that's just boring to be on TV, but that's good social game. And like, there's obviously a million more things to that, but I think this might be valuable to people that watch a lot of Survivor, because this is the one thing you can't see a lot of on TV.
Yeah, and I will say that I think Australian Survivor is that much better with it because it has so much more time, and I think that it shows social games better. But again, in writing this out, I was like, yeah, it's still only showing that one, like a couple of types of social games better, not all. And it still also picks and chooses the characters that it's going to do that for. Obviously, with Australian Survivor, it's very much based on like main characters and side characters. So you still only get that from what they want to show you. So I do think that the social game is the hardest to see, because the other stuff is right in front of you. Like when someone makes a move, it comes out in the votes, you know, most of the time. When an idol move or a numbers move or whatever that is. When someone wins a challenge, you see it. Like you see when someone's physically great. You could never, you know, kind of underestimate someone physically. But the social game, I think a lot of it happens from what we don't see. A lot of it is really hard to show. And also a lot of it, I don't think we really know what we're looking for. And I hope through this podcast, at least, you know, if the editing doesn't change, we can kind of have a sense of, okay, at least we know we're not seeing some stuff. What are we not seeing? And then try and discern some of what we're not seeing. That might be a lofty goal, but I'm hoping to kind of play that out in this podcast.
Yeah, I would love to help people to basically like be able to see the game in that light of the like actual game itself, rather than what's necessarily presented to them on TV. Just because I think with the full experience, you gain a lot more positives rather than any more negatives. I think you just see a lot more good gameplay.
Yeah, and I think that's why you came to me now, obviously thinking a lot about it, but having played two seasons back to back, like a lot of what you saw is what's informing this opinion. Like you saw so many types of social games playing out around you, and you have that full experience of that. So you can give us like the benefit of your extreme knowledge for what we're missing and what we miss, you know, 99.9999% on the island.
Yeah. And I did go from being this sort of like super fan that kind of just loved all the big flashy stuff to going through and ending up basically playing a social game because it was just so much stronger after like having witnessed all the people that were actually doing it well. Like I come out this other side and I was like, oh, okay. Like this was way better than anything I was doing. Like even though some of the stuff I did was fun and flashy, like if you want to win, like this is the stuff you probably need to get a hold on.
Yeah. I mean, they would rather show you making up a kid, but and it's easier to show, but it's
but
not.
That is bad social games, yeah, as it turns out.
So, just a few minutes into this podcast, we have identified, don't make up children, that is bad social gameplay. So
bad
people
idea.
Are already learning stuff.
Exactly. If you didn't know that already, probably need to practice a bit before Survivor. Anyway, do you want to jump into the first kind of like duality?
Well, I think before we do that, I want to kind of get your idea on these play styles that you've come up with. As we've said, we're not kind of shoehorning people into anything here. This is just kind of some major play styles that you saw on the island. And I think it's best to kind of start there, because as we go through the dualities, I think we're going to want to talk about the play styles and the players who exhibit these play styles and how they've, you know, worked out throughout Survivor history.
Okay. I can quickly jump through them.
Yeah.
And then basically as we go through dualities, we can then start like moving back to them and I can explain sort of how they all fit
in. Yeah, that's great.
Let's go through them one by one.
Yes.
Basically, at the top, we've got what I call the social butterfly. Basically, it's just a play style where you're bright, you're bubbly, you're generally well-liked by everyone. You're, as an identity, you're just that fun guy or girl. So my examples of that are pretty much like Shawnee, Sean Hampson, Luke. They're just all the people that are just really enjoyable to have around, just in a general sense. Now, the next one is a bit of a flip on that, but still feels similar in a lot of ways. So the next one is what I call the chameleon. Basically, it's someone that just builds upon the social cues of others. So they're still pleasant in the same way as the butterfly, but while the butterfly is more this internal thing, the chameleon is more looking at what everyone else likes and just fitting into that. And good examples, I think, Pia is absolutely up the top for doing that. But Nick is very good at it as well, as are many other people. It's like a very common thing in social gameplay to just try and find what other people like, basically, and fit into that. But some people do it way better than others. Next up, Silent Assassin basically just exemplifies under the radar gameplay. You've got people like Chrissy, you've got people like Shane that have both done it to a winning game. On the flip side of that, the GOAT, which is pretty much someone that's trying to do under the radar gameplay, but is not doing it very successfully. Yeah. Going down further, you've got the friend, basically someone that pushes the idea of real friendship above the game. You've got the soldier, someone who really pushes like us versus them mentality. They sort of make the ideas that votes are emotionally or morally charged. Like they're really just trying to get into a sort of personalized viewpoint, but it's very much a sort of like there's an enemy. Whereas the friend is like, oh, we're friends. Like, don't wreck that friendship by voting me out. Whereas the soldier's like that's the enemy. They're coming after us. We've got to get them. Last couple, you've got the healer, who's someone who's just all about empathy, sacrifice. They're endearing. So some examples like Tarzan giving up an idol, people like John, people like Sarah. The trickster, who's just sort of fun. You emphasize the mischievous side of the game. I think a fantastic example of this is where Luke managed to work on Ross, because Ross was starting to get bored in the game and Luke's like, hey, you don't have to do this. You can just have fun playing Survivor. And people underestimate that. That's something that on the TV, like it seems stupid, but like if you're on an island for 24 hours a day, like having fun and someone offering that when other people aren't is actually a pretty big deal. And then last two that kind of work together, you've got the player who's just a serious version of a trickster. They're someone who wants to make big moves. They're an obvious threat. They might be a shield for other players, and pretty much the same thing for a leader. So people like Brooke, Matt Rogers, Abby, they're all people that are like physical threats. They're obvious shields. They're people that are very dangerous if they get to the end. And that's all of the sort of play styles, or if you want to think of them as hats that you can put on. Obviously, there's people that I think of as examples of that because they quite heavily lean into it. But again, it's all about context. I think all of this is quite fluid and it's like a hat. You take one off, you put on another one.
Yeah. I mean, I see it as cards to play. And I think that people will see that it is really fluid because some of those things are really similar but separated by something like perception, which we'll talk a lot about, or overlap in certain ways. And in terms of, like, cards to play, I mean, you mentioned, like, Luke being the trickster. Reading them out, like, an amazing social player like Luke, I feel like he's probably played most of those cards.
I think that is actually quite an interesting point to make, is I think that like the best of the best in terms of social game, people like Luke, Shawnee, David, Pierre as well, they all can kind of move between a lot of those like positive like hats, basically. They can all like take one off, go and have a different conversation where they're a completely different person, at least in terms of perception.
Yeah. So the way that we kind of wanted to talk about that was kind of from these four separate dualities or kind of arenas, ways that you would look at the social game and ways that people play the social game. So we're starting off here with passive gameplay versus active gameplay, which was kind of the first one that you brought to me. And it's the way, like, I see that as passive being quite inherent, quite second nature, and active being very purposeful, rooted in decisions. How do you see that duality?
Yeah, I think this is a good one to start on because I think it's a concept that a lot of fans already have a grip on, like at least in some capacity. Like to me, like a passive social game is literally just someone being themselves, being genuine. It's someone just like sticking to their identity, and it can obviously come down to like a million factors. You know, you've got like age, gender, ethnicity, culture, etc. Just all the natural parts of like who you are and sort of just bringing them to the table. And that's your passive social game. Whereas active is really, really all the choices that you're making every single day and like how active you're deciding to be. So they can be verbal, like that's the most obvious, like conversations you're choosing to have, who they're with, what you're choosing to divulge in those things. That can be information about your past, about things at home. It can be stuff about the game. Like every single choice sort of fits into that active game in a way. And I think this passive versus active is a big core of basically how people are judged at the end. I think like a lot of people get judged on like whether they've made enough moves and stuff like that, but it can come back to really just how active you are taking the game, like the social part of the game. I mean, you look at choices that people make every day, like do people choose to in the morning sit by the fire by themselves and just have a bit of quiet time, which like you would think, oh, I'm just being myself, like that's fine. But someone else that's choosing to, you know, have a conversation where you get to know someone in the shelter instead of doing that, like that's a player that is getting ahead of you in the game.
Mm. When I was kind of going through these things myself, passive gameplay to me was kind of one of the most fascinating ones, because you say that we already think about it, and I think theoretically we do, but I think it's like passive gameplay especially is something we maybe don't value enough or understand enough. And by that, I mean like not, you know, allowing active people to pass you, like that's negative passive gameplay, but I'm thinking like positive passive gameplay is something mm-hmm. that I think we A, don't value enough, and B, don't understand. Like, this passive good social gameplay to me is the one that is the most difficult for them to show on TV. It's the one they're least interested in showing on TV. It's the kind of thing that doesn't jump through the screen because it's, like, inherent.
It appears boring. Like, let's be straight up. Like, passive social game, when you do it absolutely correctly, it will look boring.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hard thing for people to grasp. Like, people that want to judge Shane, want to judge Christy, want to judge Pia, and be like, oh, like you can't do that. You have to make moves. Otherwise, like, I don't like you as my winner. But in reality, Australian Survivor is 50 days and you can afford to chill. But the thing is context. Like that's so essential in a passive game. I mean, you look at someone like Pia versus Baden, and I think we'll come back to this when we look at identity. And they had such a different perception going into the end game, despite both sort of playing either from the middle or a tiny bit of power, both having a lot of information. But Pia just sort of brought this presence that sort of it was perceived in a stronger way. And I think that's because she knew exactly when to be passive and like when to sort of avoid being looked at in terms of a threat, because most people refused to look at her as a threat. Even in the mid game where she was basically running everything with Janine, no one seemed to acknowledge that. Part of that's my fault because I put Janine up on this pedestal. But at the same time, like the people working with Pia just refused to really push her as a threat.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we want to kind of say on this podcast, or that I do, is that like there is inherent value to positive passive gameplay that I think as viewers we sometimes miss. Like, I, you know, going back to that kind of the social game argument of our time, which is Michelle and Aubrey. I think what was problematic for us is that we saw all the active strategic decisions that Aubrey was making, and we missed a lot of the passive positive gameplay that Michelle had. And it's the kind of thing that I think when people have said in the past that vague thing of they have a good social game, I think a lot of the time what they think they're talking about is that passive social gameplay. It's like they're just likable. People just like them.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where it doesn't make sense when you see it on screen, but you meet them out at a fan event and you're like, oh, I totally get it. And I think we've undervalued that because it seems lazy, because it's like, oh, you're just a nice, likable person, which is, to be fair, like an incredible trait to have. Like if people just like you and you can kind of rest on your laurels a bit, then you don't have to work as hard. Then you can be seen as less of a threat. Like that's a lovely thing to have, is the first thing. But I think that it's also that we kind of miss the value in that and don't see it as much. And also that you probably do need to play a couple more cards than just that most of the time. But there's value in that that I don't even think like I kind of was picking up on before I started thinking how much like that can be a really positive thing.
Yeah. Well, and like it's, I guess this is where things become a bit fluid, because it's like passive is, I guess, like similar to your identity. It's sort of just like the image that you're presenting in a way. Like it's sort of like this thing that's yourself. But at the same time, there are choices to be made there. Like you can choose to share parts of your life at home. You can choose like how to present yourselves to certain people. And I think the people that seem to be winning this passive game are the people that genuinely are very interesting and sort of interesting to more people because they actually connect with more people. So I guess this will kind of fit in when we start to look at other things, like especially like genuine versus fake. But for me, like the people that are just enjoyable to be around, like they were not getting voted off in the start of the game. I think that is a huge thing, because let's say that you're a social player. If you have a great just passive gameplay, you're probably not getting voted out in the first like couple of votes. And then by the time that happens, you should have a strategy in mind to get yourself pretty far in the game. So just with a good passive game, someone like Luke's never, ever getting voted out in the first like four votes of Survivor ever, because he's just so much fun to have around. Like I couldn't ever imagine a scenario where someone goes, oh, like I'm going through 50 days of tough stuff. I really just don't want this fun person around who's like going to give us all great times.
Yeah.
So I think we've kind of like articulated passive gameplay a little bit.
I mean, just I wanted to build on something that you talked about, which was demographic, which I think is what is like majorly in passive gameplay. And like that's the kind of thing where we talk about like implicit bias and things like that, and kind of passive othering of people. And I think that's why there's been so much talk about like, I mean, one of the many, many reasons there's been so much talk about greater diversity on the show, because often when you talk about how it might be harder if you're that much different in any different demographic, whether it be gender, racial, age, anything like that, people say, well, no one's going out to actively be bigoted against you or work against you. And it's like, yeah, it's not active much of the time. Sometimes it is. And that's a whole different kettle of fish, because that's dangerous. But a lot of the time it's really passive. And I think when we talk about kind of the impact, like the passive gameplay and positive passive gameplay, a lot of the time you might be in a better position where you happen to just fit in with that group. Like you happen to have similar interests and be, you know, and happen to kind of work with that group. And then sometimes you just, for whatever reason, you don't fit in. And now you've lost the ability to even have that passive gameplay, because you have to work that much harder to fit in. You have to be pushing yourself that much more. And you've lost the ability, as another player might have, to take it easy and just be yourself and just be that likable person that fits in, because you don't fit into the demographic landscape. So I think that's a really important one, because it speaks to something that I think sometimes people don't understand of like,
how is it that much harder to do? 100% agree. Basically, like if you look at it this way, like there are definitely people that are going to have an easier time on Survivor. And it's basically the people, if they can find that connection just naturally. The unfortunate thing, and like this might annoy some people, but basically if you're a professional athlete in the last few seasons of Australian Survivor, you've basically had a natural advantage just going straight into the game because you've got all these people around you that have similar experiences. They all sort of like bond like quite quickly. And like you saw it in season four, there was just like the natural athletes all kind of go together. And to a degree, it happened again in All Stars. And basically, like from my own experience, I had Maddie Wahlberg. And for people that don't know, we're basically super similar people. Like we've both been wrestlers. He still is one. We've both worked American summer camps. We've both like loved Batman. There was just so many things about us that were just so similar that it was just this absolute easy, natural relationship. I can't even imagine having like five of those when you just like rock up to a beach. That's just like unbelievable luck. And I think for someone that might feel like they're a little bit different, I think what happens is you basically need to be that chameleon. You need to put the chameleon hat on and you need to find things that you can identify.
Yeah.
And that's really just the other side of this. That's the complete opposite, is the active social game. And basically, like, there's tons of examples of it where people just sort of, like, find those little things to fit in. And who's a good example? Like, I'm trying to find an example of someone that really shouldn't have fit in, but did. And like, I keep going back to talking about Bea, but she's just the perfect example because it's like people like her actually found ways of fitting in and finding things that people liked. Nick, I should actually bring up, is another one. He recognized one of my T-shirts and then decided that he was going to work out information about
me. Yeah, so your whole friendship is based on a lie.
Yeah. So, yeah, going into All Stars, he was kind of like funny in how he wanted to basically fit in with me because even though we both hit that super fan category, like I'm actually quite different to all the other super fans. Like I actually fit in with athletes quite a lot better. But that's a conversation for probably one of these other sort of dualities.
Yeah, well, I think that like when we talk about people being put in a difficult situation in the game, like what we're looking at is it just gives them fewer options, like fewer cards to pull, and they have to go through these like harder working sides of it. Like Nick is a great example where when he was swapped into Makuta, he couldn't rest on a passive gameplay because there weren't those people there to have as much of a passive gameplay and he had to be really active. Whereas like if he'd been swapped onto Vakuma with you guys, he probably could have rested on like quite a passive, just like inherent connection with you guys on that tribe. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of luck involved sometimes into being able to just be passive. There's a lot of, as we've said, social luck. And we've talked about like positive passive gameplay. Like there's also like the negative side, which I guess is just like being a jerk. Like you have like a like you're not making the decision to upset anyone. Like that would just be like being annoying around camp, right? And that could just really harm you for no reason. Like that's just bad passive gameplay.
Yeah, there's absolutely still negatives and positives to both sides. Yeah. Like you might think, oh, why don't you just have an active social game all the time? It's like, no, if you start doing that, people are going to get paranoid. So like there is like sometimes downsides to if you're just going to every person and having conversations, just as there are positives to be had going to every single person. And the same for passive as well. Like people could just think you're a jerk. People could think that you're disconnected. People could also just think that you're a goat because you're just kind of like sitting there not doing a lot. So that is the funny thing about this, is that you have to be able to read the context of the situation because there's positive and negatives to be had on both of these dualities.
Yeah. I mean, well, for active, I would say a negative is that's like impossible to do all the time. I would think, you know, you're out there for 39 to 50 days to 55 days, depending on what season you're on of what franchise. And like, sometimes you rest on being who you are. Like, I don't think every single thing you do can be a choice. Like every conversation, everything you divulge, like sometimes you just, you make that mistake. Like, I know that Henry, he told Samantha on his season that, like, about his mom passing away, and he had made the idea to do this active thing of not telling anyone that thing about him. And that's a very active thing. You know, when Adam Klein decides not to tell anyone about his mom, when Jeremy's not telling anyone that he's having, like, a baby, then you're being active all the time, because if you were resting on that passivity, you would be, you know, you'd be telling that kind of inherent secret or information. So when he told her that and he rested back on the passiveness, he was like, now I've got to get rid of her, because he'd like divulge this thing. And that was just like one slip up of being constantly active, like constantly thinking about everything you say and everything you do. Like, that is an exhausting thing to do at the best of times, like, let alone on Survivor.
Yeah, I think that's a great point for anyone that is planning on applying for Survivor, is if you plan to have any sort of active lie or something like that, or even if it's not a lie, even if it's just omitting information.
Pretending you have a kid, for sure.
Yeah, if you're doing something dumb like that, you need to be prepared to do it for 50 days. Like, you, and it's a long stint.
It's exhausting. Because then people are asking you, like, what does the kid eat? And you're like, I don't know.
Well, it burns you out for sure. And I wasn't prepared for that. And I literally gave up. Like, I was just like, well, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to, like, bother wasting my energy on this anymore. And I basically just gave up my life because it was too much. And so I don't know how the others really worked in with that for, like, a good portion of their game. People like Adam, who did it, what, until the final tribal?
Yeah, and Jeremy too.
Before, like, his reveal. And so that's, like, that's pretty intense to be able to do that. That's something I really respect. To be able to, like, hide a part of your life for the entire game is exceedingly difficult. Like, I'll say that for people that haven't played.
Yeah, I agree, because I know that it's controversial to kind of, you know, give the surprise secret at Final Tribal Council and whether you should get votes from that. Was like, I've always thought you definitely should, because I think by revealing that, you're revealing I'm different to who you think I am in a way that's been, like, a difficult game move for me to do this entire time. Like, I've been working that much more actively this entire time to hide this, and you should know that I've been hiding it because I've had to be that much more active this whole time. Like, I think that's impressive. That to me is, like, a very different type of gameplay. Like, the fact that you can't rest even 1 second, have not even one truly genuine or passive conversation where you can just be exactly who you are, means you're working all the time. Like, you should be rewarded for that, I think, in jury votes. People should take that into account when they're voting for you, that you've done that impressive thing that they didn't know about.
So that's interesting. And, like, I mean, like, we can keep talking about this, but I think it fits in perfectly with the next duality of genuine versus fake.
Yeah.
And you've kind of just touched on something that I find super interesting, and that's that you think these people should be rewarded for being disingenuous because it was difficult, whereas other people might just completely see that as, like, someone's fake, they've been lying to me this whole time, like, can't believe that. Like, that's such a hard thing to actually be able to predict. Like, until you meet the people that are going to be voting at this final tribal.
I mean, I don't think that anyone should make something up for the sake of it. I think that, A, people could see it as really fake, and B, it's not worth the effort. But I do think, like, in the specific cases of, like, Adam and Jeremy, like, the pros outweighed the cons anyway. And, like, if Jeremy were to add on that he was having a kid, he'd be way too big a threat anyway. Like, Adam didn't want to tell about his mom. Like, the sob stories were going to make it a more difficult game for them anyway. So given that they, I think, have to hide it, I think that they should then be rewarded for, like, what a great game move it was in being able to hide it for that long. But I don't think they should like actively do it on purpose.
Yeah. So I think, like, that's a really interesting, like, distinction between some other things, like Henry's yoga, for example, my fake child, things like that.
Yeah, the Australians kind of, like, are the ones doing this. Like, I don't know why. Like, you are the ones wanting to make up fake things more than anyone
else. Henry. Henry did it first. Don't blame me.
He started something.
He did start something. I think there is some, like,
but to be fair, I mean, Tony said he was a construction worker as well.
Yeah, true. But and he was the one that he gave up on that, didn't he? He sort of admitted that he was a cop.
In ways, he was like, look, in construction, people are always stealing your tools. He had some bad lies about it. And then I think by the end, he had given up, because Tony.
What I will say, like, I think the important distinction to be made here is there's a lot of things that can be genuine versus fake in a social game. I would say if you're planning on winning, make as many of them genuine as possible, because one, I think you're like looking for trouble if you go fake for no reason and you can't get out of it. That's from my personal experience. I think like it just brings attention to yourself as someone who can lie, who is willing to lie. And also like going through a 50-day game, if you can make it a long way being genuine, all of a sudden your lies are really powerful. And it's the reason why someone like Tarzan, if Tarzan all of a sudden decided he actually did want to lie towards the end of the game, he would be amazingly powerful because no one ever expected him to lie ever.
Yeah.
I don't think he did very much. I think he just had his idea of how he wanted to play, and that was 100% genuine.
Yeah. Well, that's what's something that Lisa from Survivor New Zealand has spoken a lot about. And I've never heard it articulated better. She talked about hyper-honesty, that she was honest absolutely until she didn't need to be, and then she was very, very not honest. But no one saw it coming because she'd been that honest. And I will say, like, the Australians are the ones, like, making things up fully for no reason. And that's you guys. Like, the Americans, like, at least, like, Tony was like, well, I don't want people to think I'm a cop. Like, there's a lot of examples of, like, I don't want people to think I'm a lawyer, and then people making that, like, decisions I don't think they should, like, I think they should just tell people they're a lawyer and be genuine. But, like, you guys are just making it up. And then, obviously, there's the different part of that, which is Adam and Jeremy having things that are actually really damaging for people to know. So, like, I've spoken to Jackie Glazier, and she said, even as a poker player, she wouldn't recommend that, you know, you lie about it. And that's, like, that's a really damaging one to have, because people are innately like, ooh, poker player, you know, like, well, this is your job, bluffing me, you know, for a living. And she was like, it really wasn't worth it, even with all the Rubik's Cube imagery that we got out of it. So I think it is a good one to go into genuine and fake, but I think what we're saying is, like, if you can be genuine, like, really be genuine, because it's a lot of work to be fake. It means you have to be that much more active, and you get tired of it. And then you tell people that your son isn't real, and it's a lot.
I think, yeah, the important thing, even though this is sort of like one of the quicker dualities, the important thing is that the best social players know exactly when to fake things. And I think it should be done sparingly. And if you can actually have that trust, then you can basically go really far. I mean, like, you look at people that, like, just refuse to lie, like Tarzan, but also people like Maddie Wahlberg. Maddie Wahlberg was essentially going to do the Lisa strategy. He was planning to go all the way through to merge, and then only then was actually going to start, like, lying to people. And I think if people want to be good at Survivor, just learn to use your lies sparingly.
So to me, like, the genuine fake duality, like, there's a little bit of semblance there in passive and active, because I guess, like, and that's why I guess that we started talking about it, because, like, being fake is that much more active, I feel, like, you're actually having to play the game, whereas, like, being genuine is more passive, like, that's what you would probably just, like, automatically lean on. Do you see that similarity?
Yeah, I guess that would be a similarity and something that sort of they lean into each other. I mean, you can still be fake and be passive. Like, it can be this sort of thing where it's like you're just bringing a certain energy to the table, and that can be fake. I mean, like, Henry's one, like, the yoga instructor, like, you can kind of think of it as active because it was fake. But, like, to me, that's passive social gameplay, because that's just he's bringing a vibe, and that vibe is kind of like seeping into everything else he does. Like, he's bringing this chill attitude. When people come to him, they know that he's not going to freak out. People can sort of trust him to be this guy that sort of might have some wisdom behind it. Like, to me, is this whole, like, thing that kind of goes together that people are just sort of, like, subconsciously looking at. So, like, I see his as being this passive thing. And I guess, like, the fake child as well is this passive thing where it's, like, you're trying to give off this, like, family guy vibe, like, non-threatening, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and in genuine cases of that, people talking about their family is always a good idea, unless you have some kind of sob story that will get you targeted. Like, you always talk about your family because it's so wholesome and it kind of can really pull away from the dangerous side of you. Like, you're not going to be seen as a threat if you talk about things like, oh, like, I have my family at home. Other things, like, if you're sort of going back to active social game, like, talking about things where you lose in your regular life, like, Like, it's something that you wouldn't think about very actively. But if you talk about how you win all the time at home, how, like, let's say you've got, like, a big business that's going well, like, we've seen, like, people like, what, Russell Hance, like, was already very rich. If you're talking about all these success stories, like, it's people aren't going to feel bad about voting you out because to them, it's all of a sudden you're just having this experience, and that's fine if they take it away from you because you've had the experience. Whereas if you talk about sort of, like, losses, family, anything wholesome, that sort of thing in your day-to-day life, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, well, like, this experience is much more important to that individual. So why not keep them around for a little bit more? Or at the very least, you can make people feel bad for voting you out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an example of how active gameplay can be very genuine. So I think that there is, like, quite a big difference here. Like, you know, all these things will overlap in different ways, but, like, genuine active gameplay to me, like, there are great examples. Like, someone like, you know, Tony in Winners at War, he spent, you know, the first half of the game, as you said, like, downplaying kind of the craziness and kind of disarming everyone to the player that he was by actively, I guess, actively being passive, but it wasn't that, like, every single thing was a choice. Like, he talked about how even the, like, hilarious ladder stuff, like, he wanted to make people laugh. Like, he was actively making people think he was just, like, the really fun clown. He was leaning on some passive things about being enjoyable to be around, but I think, like, the difference between someone like Luke and Tony, I feel, is, like, Luke has that, like, passive thing where you, like, inherently really like him, and then he's actively building on it, which is probably the perfect scenario, whereas Tony probably can be too much for people passively and inherently, and we saw a lot of that on Kageyan, and he was very actively working to make sure that wasn't the case. Like, he wasn't putting people off. He was, you know, every decision he made, even the decision to not go look for idols, which seems passive, was a very active choice because it wasn't in his inherent nature. And it was, like, a very active social thing that he was doing. So I feel like in terms of positive, active gameplay, like, Tony at the beginning of Winners at War is perfect for that. And then even someone like Shawnee, I talked a lot about, like, her active social gameplay in All-Stars, which was something that the edit showed really, really well. And I think,
yeah,
active social gameplay is something that the edit can kind of, you know, hit on a little bit more. But even just, like, going to Zach and, you know, talking about the birds, and we saw the conversation she was having, and we got the confessionals behind them of why she was having them, that they showed her active gameplay better than most social gameplayers get shown, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's sort of like that duality of passive versus active is kind of hard to define when you're like, oh, well, they're actively being passive. But I think the good way to think about it is, like, if you use Tony as the example, making a crazy ladder and everyone having a fun time, I see that as active. Like, he's made the conscious decision to make a silly ladder. He's climbing up it. He's being crazy, being loud. But then passively, he kind of would switch stuff, like, that sort of stuff off. Like, all of a sudden, like, if he's just around camp, he's making that choice of, like, well, just as a person, I'm just choosing to not be annoying, not being too overbearing. I'm going to listen to people. And I see that as, like, passive.
I think it depends. Like Tony is someone who's naturally, I think, quite overbearing. Like, you know, you might have, like, someone like Pia, who we keep going back to. She's a great example. There's so many examples. They're not naturally overbearing. So if they're just sitting there and not irritating you, like, that's quite passive. Whereas I feel like it was quite active for Tony not to put people off, because that's the kind of person he is. Who's a crazy man who will put you off inherently. And it's an active choice for him to be like, stop doing that. Just hold yourself back. Stop doing it.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way that these things kind of work. Obviously, like, the formula on how they interact with, like, each person's just, like, natural way that they are. Because I do think that, like, yes, passive and active are very different to different types of players, and genuine and fake, like, all of these things, you know, I guess affect each person differently. And that's why we're saying it's super fluid.
Yeah, very fluid and very, like, context driven.
Yeah.
And I think it's, like, that is sort of the starting point, is you need to work out what will annoy people, what will people respect, what people like, before you make all of these decisions, which is probably why you should just be genuine at the start and then see if you can fit into things.
Yeah, for sure. Like, be yourself until you work out if that will work, and then stop being, like, change parts of yourself to work with everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of genuine and fake, so in terms of genuine, the play style, I think, like, looking at that, like, surely, like, friend, healer, people that have those, you know, obviously natural connections and empathy and selflessness, that works for them in the game.
Yeah, they're hats that you would definitely take on. Things like a friend, where you're just sort of like really like friend is a funny one because you can be genuine or fake doing that. Like you can really just hype the idea that this friendship is more important than the game in a lot of ways. And like, you can do that in a ton of different ways. Like you can talk about things you're going to do together after the show, similarities that you have. You just really hammer in that idea that you were a friend. And if they got rid of you, like you don't say that if they got rid of you, it would be horrible, but you really heavily imply it by saying, you know, like we're going to have so much fun. Like after the show, we're going to do this together. Like the idea that that friendship is bigger than that is very, very powerful. But it can also put a target on your back if people see something like a power couple, people see an unbreakable friendship, stuff like that. But the friend, I think, can be genuine or fake. You can definitely fake that friendship quite easily, promise a lot of things that you don't follow through on. It's not a great idea unless you really need to do that. But then other more genuine ones, I see the healer as being super genuine, sort of like friendly person that you can sort of like lean on, someone that comforts everyone really, someone that just has their whole sort of identity and passive game around just being empathetic and being like a shoulder to cry on, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I see the duality of genuine and fake as all about motivation, and that being like how self-interested are you in this motivation. So for something like genuine relationships, like are you making those relationships, for me, any time that it's self-interested becomes slightly not genuine to me, to different levels, which is a strange thing because self-interest drives, you would hope, most of the game of Survivor for you. But I think some things like just genuinely happen. You just do make that relationship and it's not to further you in the game. And Tarzan obviously epitomizes that, where he had these like genuine relationships. He gave Tessa an idol, and like that can be a double-edged sword because how much are you working for yourself? Are you being emotionally manipulated? Do you have these emotional pitfalls? And then like on the other end of that spectrum, and like total fake, for me, the person who epitomizes that like clearly comes to mind is Brian Heidick. I'm the winner of Survivor Thailand, because all his relationships were calculated and fake. He didn't care about any of these people, but he like made it up the whole time. And the pitfall of that is that the cracks started to show, and at the final tribal council, the jurors were like asking him how much he knew about them and how much he cared about them. And it's hard to fake that for that long and have people not pick up on it in such an intimate setting. And he only barely won the final tribal council against a very easy opponent. So for me, those are like two ends of this pole, like of the spectrum, like Tarzan to Brian Heidick. It's like, how genuine are you? And like every relationship is probably on that spectrum where it's like, I just really like you. Like, I don't care how good it is for my game. Like, we have this relationship versus like, I really can't stand you, but, you know, I want to work with you. It's better for me. Or like, I do like you and it's better for my game. And then you kind of get into that motivation and the self-interest.
Yeah, somewhere right in the middle is that person that's like, well, I like you, but also I'm going
to
win.
Yeah, and that's what you hope to be. I think that's what, like, ideally for this, if that's what you want. You want to be in the middle of two very extreme opposites, which is genuinely like people, genuinely connect with people, have them genuinely connect with you, but then also never let that overwhelm the fact that you're here to win and that should come first.
For me, like, I think being in the middle of every single one of these is probably the perfect gameplay. That's just my personal opinion. That's obviously going to change for everyone. But for me, for all these four dualities, I think being right dead center is going to get you very, very far every single time you play Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of passive and active, you want to be in the middle of that as well, where you're constantly thinking about it and also just people really like you. This is like, you know, perfect situations of when you're the perfect player. Have you ever had something happen where what were the genuine friendships or relationships that came closest to you to kind of getting in the way of that self-interest where you felt, did you ever have that where that genuine side of it could have been damaging to you?
Oh, definitely. I think the two major ones were when Maddie Wahlberg left, and then also when Luke left, and then in All-Stars, like, there's the obvious one where I didn't give Nick my advantage, which I regret. But on top of that, like, there's things like I voted for Shawnee as well. And I think those are all moments where it's like you really have, like, a conflict in terms of, like, you wanting to win the game but also you wanting to, like, actually – be there for a friend. And like, you really think about that with the Matt one, especially. That was very early on. And I did consider literally just handing in my idol and sort of walking out, and in the hopes that they would lose again. And then he would just play the idol on himself. And like, I would get to basically watch the episode from home where they were all like scrambling to like get each other out at the tribal. That was what I envisioned as like the absolute legacy that I would leave. In the end, it worked out better for me, but that was, yeah, we were like sort of, we could have definitely had a reality where Maddie Wahlberg went to three instead of me. The Luke one as well, like I thought about not voting for him, like just because, I don't know, you just want him to win because he's just so likable.
Mm. And people do that to different extents, like to go back to like Jeremy playing an idol on Steven. You know, that, a lot of that was probably just their genuine relationship. And then the next round he knew Steven was going, he had another idol and it wasn't worth the second idol to him. But it got them, you know, the genuine relationship got them as far as the first idol. So we're seeing a lot of that, I think. And that's probably really hard to pass out while you're on the island. It's like, I want to be like just genuine enough, but also like really emotionally disconnected to the point where I can like still put myself first. And that's why Survivor is so great, because that's the whole point, is that you're living together and you're going through this thing and you become so close. But you also are backstabbing each other. And it's always been about that duality, I think, of like genuinely connecting with people and then having to put yourself first and having to, you know, be a little bit dishonest and sometimes very dishonest in that way.
Yeah. And that's the crux of the game. And I think that's something that's been kind of lost on Mon viewers and like myself included before I played. Like, I think that a lot of people just be like, oh, well, like, why didn't you vote this way? Cause like, that would have been the best strategic move. Like, you're an idiot. And it's like, well, these are human beings. Like, you like are with them 24 hours a day. You're going to get connected to them. You're not allowed to talk to anyone else, like including production. Like, you don't talk to them. They ignore you. So it's like, this is your only point of human contact. And so you get really connected to people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why they make it hard for you, is that like it's so easy to say before the game, like, I'll just go out there and not care about anyone and just like stab some backs and win the game. And like the reason it's Survivor is because like you can't do that. They're your family out there.
Yeah. Before the game, you're like, blindside. I'm going to like beat everyone. I'm going to like be this like hardcore player, like with no heart. And then I'm going to go to the end and say like, everyone suck it, like vote for me. And then you actually play and you cry like 10 times and realize like you're not that person at all. And you shouldn't have like pretended that you're going to be this badass.
Did we see you cry on the show?
Definitely at least once. Like I definitely cried like 8 times, I think.
You count
something like that.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I was not expecting that. Like, there's at least 1 or 2 times where I cry.
Okay, 8 times is like nothing. I feel like I've cried like 8 times today. That sounds worrying. I have not. But like, I could easily cry 8 times in a day. That would not be that hard.
Oh, definitely don't play Survivor then. You'll cry all the time.
For many reasons. Much more than just that. For Fate gameplay, do you have the play styles that kind of lend themselves to that the most?
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, it can be a little bit fluid, but I think the ones that absolutely, like, epitomize it is probably, I'm going to say the chameleon.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Epitomizes it, because that's really, like, you find things that people like, and you just really go for it. You just can either make up a story, or you can have like a little thing that's true, but then you just kind of blow it out of proportion and you always go back to conversations about it when like you only really know like one tiny thing about the topic, but you just keep taking it back anyway, repeating back phrases that they've said. You can do all sorts, like just sort of taking that stance of like being sort of like personality mirroring a little bit. Mm. And that's something I kind of did a little bit with Zach, but kind of regret that I didn't do it more, because he was an important sort of vote in the game. And that's something that David did perfectly. David was like, oh, here's a freak person.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's talk about weights. Let's talk about like Perth, all these things that they had in common.
How much can you talk about Perth? Like, I'm asking.
Hey, you can talk about Perth a whole bit. You're talking to someone from Perth.
Yeah, I'm asking you. I'm like, is Perth that interesting that you can get that much out of it?
Yeah, you can talk heaps about it. And it's like, you can talk about the same places. It's just going back to like having those things in common. But you just, instead of talking about anything else, you just talk about the things you have in common and really just force that idea that you're super similar so that they consider you to be a friend, basically. Yeah. And again, like the lines between genuine and fake are pretty blurred when it comes to that. There's also like, to me, the soldier is something that I see as being this like fake construct, because it's really in a game where it's supposed to be everyone for themselves, especially Australian Survivor. There's no second place prize. There's no third place prize. Like creating this idea of us versus them mentality is really only benefiting the people that create that idea.
Yeah, great point.
Like you create the idea like Makuta versus Vakama in All Stars, like that only benefited a couple of people. Like it was the people that were at the top of Makuta and that's it. No, like Lee didn't benefit from it. Jackie didn't benefit from it. Tarzan didn't benefit from it. It was pretty much Sean, Mo and Dave that were the only ones that were ever going to benefit from like wiping out the entire opposition, because they were the ones that had the follow-up to go with it once the numbers went down.
Yeah, I mean, Chameleon to me, like that makes sense so much as fake, because that just feels like you're doing the thing that you'll blend into. That's calculated, which makes it feel fake. But in terms of like the soldier, so do you feel like everyone on that Makuta side who was at the top knew that they were doing it in this calculated way? Like, I know someone like Dave definitely did and was thinking about how it benefited him, but someone like Sean and Mo, did they buy into it? And if they did buy into it, even if it was wrong, because again, no prize for second place, which I think probably is something that needed to be reminded for some of those people. I mean, Sean came second. Like, she literally came second and took second place by going down with the Makuta ship. So is it fake for her? As much as it's wrong, is it fake for her if she truly believes it?
Well, no. Like, I guess it's sort of genuine. But, like, to me, it's basically you're creating an us versus them narrative when it's supposed to be an individual game. So that's like the start of it. And if that benefits you pushing into that narrative, then you're a good social player. If you're just going along with that, someone else has created this like, oh, us versus them, like, and you're not the one that basically came up with that, you are limiting your options. Like, because if that's not your idea and it's not something that you can foresee, like being the person that really wins out from it, like, you're losing. Like, they're creating a pathway to the end that pushes you out of the situation. And like, especially the idea of making these emotionally charged votes. Like, you could tell the vote on Lockie was emotionally charged. Like he'd gotten rid of Matt Rogers. Like, we got to get revenge. We're going to take him down. It's going to be awesome. Like, we're going to be able to say sucked in, like, as he like walks out. And like, yeah, that's cool. But also for someone like Zach, for someone like Lee, you've just kicked a guy out that could have been a massive shield for you and was willing to work with you. So it's like, it's a weird strategic decision for the people that weren't coming up with that plan, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Matt Rogers himself in 2018 was the perfect example of the fake soldier, because it was all about the family until Lydia needed to go home, you know, until Sam needed to go home, until it didn't work for him. So I think that definitely using the group mentality for all of us when it's really just only benefiting you and kind of shrouding it in that fake sense of camaraderie, yes, definitely something there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I see the soldiers being this sort of fake thing. The fake sense of camaraderie being like, you know, we're in it together, guys, when really you're just following someone else's plan to the end. Basically, like, they have a clear benefit that they've thought about in their head. And you're just not really seeing it. You're just falling into this other idea that, like, you're playing a team game now instead of playing an individual game.
Yeah, that's something David did really, really well. It is kind of funny that I feel like Matt Rogers has been on both sides of those things. But Matt Rogers, I don't know if it's because he's, like, he is an athlete, like many of these people are. And I think some of that, like, inherent athleticism is why we see this so much on Australian Survivor. That's, like, us versus them to extremes. Although it happens on all Survivors. And probably the fact that the show is super tribal is why you kind of get into that groove. But, like, it is kind of crazy that he definitely used, it was like, you know, our team to the end for his own benefit, to the point where, like, he could win a reward and, like, take Shawnee and Fenella on it, because you know, who weren't in his side because it would benefit him individually, but then like vote out people from his own team by saying that they were a team. But then on the other side, like he was very much the head of the minority and he was targeted and people were brought together against him. Matt Rogers brings out like the team sport and everyone is what I'm taking from this.
I think that's just a matter of context, going back to context, because I think if you have the majority, like in 2018, that's a fantastic, fantastic social game. Like you create us versus them, we're all together, you pick off some of your own and all of a sudden you're right there at the end. And like, it's amazing gameplay. And I think he just got sort of picked out because he was like too obvious of a threat, basically. Mm-hmm. And he got really heavily sort of targeted by Benji. I think if you manage to sort of take yourself down a peg while doing that, then you're looking like a winner. Whereas in All-Stars, I think it was probably the wrong context to be doing that. Like you didn't really have to sort of create that narrative that's us versus them. You can just try and fit in with some of those other people, create the whole like keep the tribe strong thing, like Abby did very, very successfully, where it's basically like you're just someone who's all of a sudden at the top. Can I talk about Abby quickly? Because I actually think she's an amazing social gamer. Mm-hmm. I think that she finds very, very good ways of fitting in with people naturally. Everything seems natural, and she has a very smart way of talking about things in positives. And I think she always like has this idea of talking about the positives in sort of keeping her plans going. What we saw a lot of in All-Stars is, you know, keeping the tribe strong. And like, to me, it wasn't really about that. Like, it was very clear she had this path. She had the idea of who she wanted around her. And she was just going to say whatever and just keep the people that she wanted around her, basically. It wasn't really about positivity. It wasn't really about strength at all. It was about doing her thing. And I think that was sort of this really interesting social game where it's basically you just blind others to what's going on until you actually have that power. Yeah. And they formed this cohesive group that was like Lee, Lydia, Sean, Abby. And they had the numbers that they needed. John as well, they had the numbers that they needed just by sort of creating this false narrative.
Yeah, well, it's funny the way the viewers get blinded by fake gameplay. Because I remember people were so angry at Abby in that second week that it was all about voting out the weak, which, you know, the superfans really, really hate because Survivor's not a sport and people have their own diverse value. But I was like, I gave Abby 3 cheesy points that week because I was like, firstly, she ran the whole week. And she did immediately go home, but she got swap screwed to a degree. But, you know, I was like, the reason she's saying vote out the weak is because her alliance are all the strong. Like, this is fake. Like, it's a line that makes sense in terms of, like, it's for all of our benefits so we can win challenges. We all want to win rewards and immunities, don't we? But really, it's, like, mostly for my benefits because I'll be winning challenges. And even if I don't, my friends will stick around. So she did that amazingly well. And that I would give her those 3 cheesy points again. Even though she got voted out one episode later, she deserved them.
Oh, I thought it was amazing gameplay. And that was sort of like the soldier, I guess, thing where it wasn't necessarily like an us versus them, but it's like a us together thing where it's like all positive wording, positive phrasing all day, every day, where it's like, you know, like our tribe is going to win. Like it's going to be one of us winning at the end. And in reality, you're just doing whatever you want. But like to other people, the narrative that they can't disprove is still just going to be, oh, well, you know, we're just trying to win. And it's like, it's a team game instead of in Abby's head, it's an individual game and she's winning.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, probably a bit too early in terms of like putting yourself as a leader timing wise, but I like the move in isolation.
And it nearly did work. If she gets a better swap, then I'm forced to play with her because I was kind of right in the middle playing both sides at that point. If we have a different swap, I would be forced to play with her. If we have a different swap with other people, they'd probably fall right in with her as well. So I think if she didn't get swap screwed, she probably goes final 8 or final 7 again.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about internal versus external. And this is like, you know, I think obviously active and passive, these are words we've heard before in Survivor analysis, fake and genuine kind of speaks for itself, but internal and external is something that you brought to me, which I haven't heard verbalized that much in this context. Would you want to kind of take us through your thoughts on it?
Oh, yeah, I think it's super simple as a concept, but then it's very, very complex in terms of actual gameplay. So to me, internal is just every single active move that you make to sort of have that perception around mm-hmm. yourself, the narrative around your own identity, and that can be different for every single player, whereas external is what social things you try to force on someone else.
Yeah.
So people don't just end up being a goat purely for objective reasons. People become goats because people have social games that push that idea. Like, people don't just sort of sit there and go, oh, you know, like, this person isn't playing very hard, I'm just going to leave them alone. Like, you'll be sitting around a campfire and someone will go, oh, this person isn't really doing much, are they? It's like, oh, yeah, they're like a little bit of a goat, huh? And you just put in, like, sneaky comments every now and then. You get people to agree. And then if you can get that narrative into a place where it's being repeated every time that person is talked about, then perception is reality in Survivor. So if you're like planning on doing something where it's like external gameplay, you can do sneaky things like fit in conversations about a certain person every time they're away and just slowly change the narrative about a person. And likewise, every single time you have a conversation with someone, you are working on your own internal sort of social gameplay. Like, you are trying to fix that person's view of you and fix it in a place where, like, it won't be all negative things. So,
yeah.
Like, for a very quick example, I was going to be the sneaky person the first time I played. Heavily planned on it, but everything at Contenders Beach was super goody-goody, and it really wasn't the right context to just go like full Tony running into the bushes, getting an idol. And so instead I kind of really worked that first day on external gameplay and basically just throwing everyone else I could under the bus. So for example, when people would go off, even if they were doing it for completely genuine reasons, like, you know, like going to find firewood, going to get coconut, something like that, I'd be like, oh, this person's been gone a long time. Like, what do you reckon of that? And you just throw out that comment and then let other people build their own suspicions. Or, for example, Casey, all on the first day, this was actually quite funny. Like, the first day, she didn't really have an idea of setting up the like camp, but we put her in charge and we just let her kind of like fail a little bit at it. Basically, like, the shelter was an absolute horrific disaster, and me and Andy were both just there playing sort of external gameplay and just letting her fail at it so that people would get annoyed at her. And it worked. Like, John was super annoyed at her the whole first day. I know a few other people were really annoyed at her, and it was so good because it was just this thing where it's like, I know I'm not the person people are thinking negative thoughts about.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of external, I feel like there are so many examples of creating that negative perception. Like, David did it to Nick in All Stars Before the Merge. Like, anytime anyone calls anyone a power couple, I feel, or kind of says someone's poverty 2.0, which seems to happen every single US season, I feel like you're putting that target on them. Sometimes it's a negative target, sometimes it's a big target. But like, what are the examples of doing this positively? Because surely there's a way to kind of externally give someone a positive perception in a way that benefits you.
Oh, you can do it in a variety of ways. I mean, what you can do if you're early on in the game, what you do is really praise someone. Mm-hmm. And you could basically create your own shield where that shield will still love you, because it's so early in the game that no one's really thinking about threats yet. People aren't thinking about that. But you just sort of keep giving this specific person praise. You set them up. Maybe you give them a nickname, something like that.
You love the nicknames. It's always going to have to be nicknames in Australian.
Well, this example isn't even me, and I don't know yet if this was deliberate or not, but it's like people calling Sean the horse, like, because he was basically like pulling us all along. Mm-hmm. And it's basically this narrative that was like semi-true, where he's this amazing like athlete, amazing competitor, and it's all praise. It's all positive things. So he can't hate you for it, like, because you're just being like appreciative of what he's doing. You can just have conversations around the campfire where you're like, man, like, Sean is so strong. Like, do you remember this bit of the challenge? Because we do that. Like, we go back to camp and we talk about like how fun stuff was and like how awesome certain bits were, and you just bring it up all the time. You just keep being like, oh, like, man, Sean, you're so good at this. this? Like you're so athletic. Like, can you teach me? All that sort of stuff in front of other people. And it's a slow burner where you get to merge and all of a sudden no one wants to play with that person. And that's exactly what happened to Sean. Sean's an amazing strategic player. He's an amazing social player. And he was just too much of a threat that they wanted him gone straight away. Like, there was just nothing he could have done. He was just gone because he was just too much of a threat. And you can sort of do that to anyone, really. You can just really hark in on their positives and they become a shield.
So the pros and cons that I see of both internal and external gameplay in this way is that, like, the perception that either you have of others or have created of others or of yourself in the game, like, should evolve throughout the game. And I think it's hard to lock yourself into something, and I think it's probably playing with fire to do this because you might, like, some good example, like, you could lock yourself into not being a threat, but then no one will vote for you at the end, but no one's gotten rid of you, but then, like, it's come back to bite you. And I think, like, a different example is if you lock someone else into being a threat and make them a target, if you can't get rid of them, they now will win. You know, like, Rick Devins is a great example of that, or, like, Ben, they literally couldn't get Ben out because then it was fire and he had all these idols, but they had built him up so much as being this threat that then no one was going to beat him at the end. So, like, it's a hard one because you never want to be, I think, one thing in Survivor. It's such a long game that it evolves in what, and it's a diverse game that it evolves in what you need to be and what everyone else needs to be to you. And kind of creating that, you don't want to stagnate yourself on that.
Yeah, and we're once again pointing out that it's like, it's context, context, context. Like, you can have a negative side to every single version of these events. You can have...
You want to be right, like, in the middle. You want to create perceptions of yourself and everyone to the perfect degree, but not so much that it boxes you into something that you can't get out of.
It's more the context of the game. If you get that read that people want to start getting rid of targets, if you ever hear that conversation come up, like, then you start throwing things out. If you have the context that certain players have said, oh, you know, like, I might wait until merge and then I might do this, like, because people will talk like that. People will talk about what they're kind of planning in terms of how they want to play. Like, you can foresee that and then start building certain things towards that. If you're a social player, like, you can really just frame people's minds towards other people, or you can frame them in certain ways towards yourself. And this is where social games starts to blend into everything else. Like, you can throw a challenge, you can throw a couple of challenges, you can pretend to be quite weak going into merge, and it's not really going to matter that much if you can keep it to the right degree. And then all of a sudden you hit merge and no one really cares, like, what you're doing, because you're just sort of seen in a certain way. And I think if you're looking at internal, there's still all the same positives and negatives. Like you said, like, you can get to the end and no one think you played properly. I think the idea is that if you're really good at social gameplay, you can actually pitch to others the benefit. Like, if you're naturally going to be this power player, you need to be able to pitch to the others that you are their shield and their ticket to actually winning. And at least you can get further and further to the point where maybe you could win out in the game, or do something like that. Whereas if you're going to push yourself as being this sort of, like, under the radar, you really need to have some chops about you to be able to get to that final tribal council and pitch yourself the way that Chrissy did. So I think whichever way you plan to go that, you need to pick your context and pick how you plan to actually get the best of it.
Yeah. Pick a way to kind of solve the pitfalls of what every reputation or perception in Survivor has. Like, if you're pushing yourself too much in one way, you're going to have an answer for the fact that you've probably gone too far in that way, because everything in Survivor is too far in one way. Because it's just too versatile a game. And that is something that, you know, it's hard to kind of leave that to, like, a final tribal council speech for Chrissy, but it worked out really well for her. I just think it can be difficult in that way to kind of pitch yourself so much as this person and then have to change everyone's minds. But, you know, that's kind of what you have to do, because you can't be, if you're going to make yourself out to be something that'll benefit you at certain parts of the game, like, it will inherently disadvantage you at other parts of the game, and you have to work out a way around it.
Yeah. And I think internal versus external, like, both sides of that take a lot of awareness, like, awareness of how you're perceived, how other people are perceived, and really, like, leaning into those things and sort of, like, playing with that. Because I think it would be kind of silly if you are a player, like, a big player going into stuff, to just try and, like, mess with that and try and, like, go under the radar completely. And everyone's like, you know, like, I can see what you're doing. Like, you're trying to hide and it's not going to work. So I think, yeah, having that awareness is very important, especially heading into the end game, knowing like what other people are thinking and what they value is going to be important for jury management.
I would say that like heightened awareness is key to all of this. And I've always thought awareness is like one of the most crucial parts of the game, but like to know yourself well enough to know like, when you're being genuine, when you're being fake, when to do that, when to sit back and be passive, when to be active, you know, how far to push certain character types of yourself and others. Like all of that takes such extreme awareness, which many people don't have, which is why this is all so hard to pull off and kind of more simple to talk about theoretically. But I think like awareness is like the most crucial key to all of this.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely like a safe pitch that I could put out, like this pathway where you've got a pretty safe bet of making it far. But yeah, at the end of the day, if you want to win, you need the awareness and you need to really have that timing to sort of flip these things correctly. I mean, like saying that, like there's a pretty simple path if you want to go far. Like you've got to be genuine, less fake stuff if possible, and then just be somewhere in between passive and active. Just don't be too annoying.
Don't be too annoying. That one's a tricky one for a lot of people. but like even someone like Christy, just like her own awareness of being able to turn around and explain her game. Like if she doesn't have that, then she's just completely passive and she's just been under the radar and nothing's going to come and save her. But to be able to kind of have the awareness to then change that internal archetype through really active gameplay in her final tribal council speech is all based on awareness and the fact that she could pull that off so well.
Yeah, I think, yeah, she's an example of someone that just had that heightened awareness of how everyone was planning to talk to her and just flipping that on its head by showing the full awareness. And quite often that's all a jury wants is like the acknowledgement that you sort of know what you've been doing. I think that was some of like Shan's problem the first time she played was she really didn't own up to doing some of these things. And that's all the jury really wanted was like this acknowledgement that you understand the way that you played and you understand the way that it affected other people.
Yeah, having self-awareness, like having awareness in life is like something that's important to me. Like, it's hard for me to deal with people who don't have awareness. And I imagine it's like that much more difficult to be with on the island, let alone to play Survivor that way. So yeah, that's something people got to work on before they go on the show. I've got a couple of questions around internal and external. The first is, as a returning player, how does that change? Because like, you know, you see this all the time, like for Nick, for example, like when he was coming in as the snake, like we spent a lot of time talking about how he was going to have to change that internal perception and kind of talk about how like he doesn't do the podcast anymore and he's a dad now and like that's his life. And like even at Winners at War, I know that, you know, some people are going to be able to sit at Final Tribal Council and just be Parvati or just be Boston Rob and not have to have done that much, but just get there. And it is harder to get there when you're a bigger threat, but not have to kind of prove their game as much as others who came in with the lower reputations. And so there's like all this really murky stuff around internal perception, I feel, within that when you're coming in as an all-star where people know you and you know others.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is probably that double-edged sword. Like you either go in as a player where you're a threat or you go in as someone into all-stars where people are kind of like, oh, like, should you really be here? And that's a horrible thing too. Like the fact that like everyone has played before and like, yes, some people made it further than others, but to go in to all-stars and have this natural disadvantage where people are kind of like, oh, well, do you really need to be here? I can't even imagine going in with that and like feeling the need to play extra hard just to like make up an extra game's worth of moves, if that makes sense to you. Mm. Like sort of like the idea that you're already behind walking onto the starting mat. So like to me, it seemed like people didn't think about that a lot, the perception of other players. But if they did, it was more leaning towards the positives. Like I know all the people that were in the player group really seemed to like resonate towards each other. It's like they wanted to be seen as an even bigger player. So why not play alongside the other move makers and like really cement in that legacy? So I think it was an interesting thing where socially the people that were sort of threats started to sort of mingle together a little bit. It's weird because like you saw Phoebe, Dave, Matt Rogers mm-hmm. and Henry all kind of like just gravitating towards each other after that. And then you had people that were the Snakes that did sort of the same. I think for a lot of people, it was kind of fun just trying to push for that like next level to the gameplay.
But everyone takes it differently because I know that like, because I was going to ask you about, it's not just the fact that you're all stars, it's also the fact that the show was like, and here are the Snakes and here are the players, you know, yeah, and like, but that's what the show will do. Like, it'll be like, you're a hero, you're a villain, you're a hustler, you know, whatever it is, and put you into this box that you're then like kind of working within, but also, you know, in some ways you may really not want to be in that box. And I know like Dave like took it as his like personal mission to get rid of all the people who were on that mountain with him. And that was like a big thing in his like genuine relationship with Phoebe, or as genuine as she thought it was, that he was like, all the players got to go. I got to be the last one left who's like within this core four. When she was taking it probably like, hey, like we're both players, like that connects us. And you just never know how that other person's going to view that perception, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm a person that kind of likes to get outside of that box. So in a way it didn't affect me a lot, but I think in the first few days, it definitely did. Like, I know that Shane just had no interest in playing with me whatsoever. Like, and I think that was the biggest disconnect with any of the straight up hero style players. I don't think any of them wanted a bar of me because I'm the complete opposite. Like, I was, especially in my first season, I was just purely chaotic. And I used to use very, very specific language with people like Sean and people like Lydia, and I would always talk about like, you know, stability. I would talk about like, what other words did I use? It was always like the same words, and it was always like, I want us to be stable, cohesive, like low fast, low stress. And it was always like using those words and those phrases, and I would always have this sort of like calm demeanor. I would talk slower, like there would be very, very specific like wording and styles that I would use with them, because I knew that that was what they wanted. Like, they didn't want like big moves, like just blindsiding everyone humanly possible in the first like couple of days. But with this identity thing of like internal, external going into the game, Shane just didn't want a bar of it. And I think for other people, they'll probably be the same sort of like minor things that kind of influence their start to the game as well. External, it was pretty easy to just be like, hey, there's a winner here. Like, let's just get rid of that.
Yeah.
And that was just plain and simple, I think, for both sides, which is like the epitome of simple external gameplay. You're just like, hey, someone doesn't fit in. They're a winner. Like, let's get rid of them.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So moving on to the last category, that is identity and relationships. This is something, yeah, I think this is something as well that's like we see as the less obvious duality, like genuine and fake. What's your perception of this?
Yeah, I think like a few other things, I think this kind of like is a little bit fluid with some of the other dualities, but in another way, it's also its own thing, because it's really, I see it as two opposite ends of a spectrum, basically. Like, you either are working on your own identity in the game as a person, or you're working on how you're connecting to other people. And like, I see them as being kind of opposite constructs, because in relationships, you're really trying to do the group thing. You're trying to like work in relationships where they're just building one on top of each other, whereas identity, you're building every single person's perception of you, and it just is steadily growing into this full human, full player by the end of that game, by the end of 50 days. There's quite large disparities, like in terms of like physical side of things, in terms of like social side of things. Like there's big things you can do to either like work on identity versus work on relationships. Like if you're in a team challenge, for example, you can be that person that just really wants to show yourself off as the competitor, as a leader, as something like that, just by putting every bit of you into a challenge. Or you can be the person that sort of takes that step back and goes, you know what, I am strong, but I can also really push that idea of us working together. I can be that person that stays back and help people over. It's really sort of how you use your strengths to sort of push into one or the other.
Yeah, I think this is the one that probably seems like the least duality of it all. Until for me, like, so there was one player that kind of epitomized how this is very much a spectrum that you can be on one side of. And obviously we want to be like in the middle, but like an example is like someone like Mo Hope, I feel, is like pretty much like the individual relationship player, to the point where like she had, I think, like all, you know, fully positive relationships and then fully negative relationships with very little in between from what I saw. So a lot of that's really positive. She's got these really key connections that will carry her through the game, that will be important to pulling off moves, that will give her power, like very important. Then she has negative relationships, which might put a bit of a social target on her back, which might be, you know, a difficult thing to handle. But I think the identity was a tough one because no matter who you ask, we're getting a very different kind of understanding of who Mo was in the game. That becomes difficult when, again, like, you know, you have like advantages or twists being used against you, possibly, because you don't have like kind of a more cohesive or kind of even understanding from everyone else in the game, or especially with the jury where, you know, are you getting all the votes from the people you had a negative relationship with? You know, you had enough positive relationships that help you in the game and they might vote for you, but then are you getting enough from the whole group? So I think that she kind of epitomizes this idea of like, sometimes when your game is that individual in terms of the individual relationships being a certain way, either positive or negative, you get kind of a messy full identity where other people maybe honest don't have as strong relationships, but maybe not as negative relationships. And they just have like a more open kind of understanding from the group of who they are, which might be easier to vote for, get more votes, or, you know, maybe won't take them as far in certain moves, but maybe they'll get less retaliation. And there's like a bit of a difference there.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example because she was someone where the relationships was really what was worked on. There was a lot of time invested to like these heavy, deep relationships. And then in other cases, like it sort of was the opposite and you end up with this identity that's just completely blurred. If you ask like four different people, they're just all going to give you completely different answers on her gameplay. And I think the important distinction here is identity is the thing that's probably going to win you the game if you're sitting at that final tribal council, and relationships is what probably gets you there. So like, to be honest, like relationships, you build them, you need good enough relationships to really just push you forward, to get you through the game. You need them to be open enough that people listen to you, that people will respect you, that people will sort of like go with your ideas if that's what comes up. But identity is the key to winning. Like if you get to the end and people all have this perception of you, even if it's fake, even if it's completely fake, like if that's the perception, then you lose. And I think the fantastic example to go back to is American Survivor, back to that Michelle versus Aubrey. And I think it was people after the game sort of came out and said like, oh, we just thought Aubrey was lying when she talked about certain moves that she did because her identity really just didn't work in that capacity.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a would you rather. It's like, would you rather have the majority of people respect and like you enough, or would you rather have some of the closest relationships in the game, but then some of the worst perceptions or relationships? Like, you know, the even thing is like when you're sitting next to just one or two people, it'll probably get you their vote, you know? But then the deep relationships is like when anyone could work with anyone in the game, they choose to work with you. But possibly you have to sacrifice some relationships to do that, because it's probably harder to get a deep relationship with everyone. So if you invest really deeply with some people, you might then have that expense of having a worse relationship with others, and maybe they won't vote for you at the end, even against one or two other people. Whereas, like, or you're going to kind of try and cover all your bases, but then do you have that ride or die that can be so crucial in the game? And mastering it would be, you know, getting some semblance of all of that, but that's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I see someone like David as being somewhere like in the middle that sort of mastered it, where he would give enough to a relationship where it's like he was enjoyable to have around. It felt personable. It never felt like too fake. But then the real strength was the identity. Like, no one ever questioned what David's identity was. He was a guy who was always going to make the big moves. They weren't going to be stupid big moves. Like, he just was a player through and through. But he was also nice guy, chill, quite fun to have around. And it was just like this easy package to go together. Like, you ask any person and they will just say that Dave's a chill guy. They'll say he was a big player. He made great and smart moves. And that's him as a person. Like, it was just, every single person you ask that played with him will probably say a very similar thing in terms of that identity. And then, like, with the relationships, yeah, it didn't, like, it's not the sort of thing where he's skimping on it, because he had an amazing social game. But it's also the sort of thing where he wasn't putting too much into it. He was putting what was necessary into it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you put a lot into it, you naturally put off other people, I think. Because you put in so much to one side, then it becomes uneven, or you only have so much capital that you can give, or so much energy that you can give. And it's about, like, kind of placing that energy where you can. So sometimes I think it is a choice to be made. It's like, am I going to be all in on this one side? You know, like, someone like Matt Rogers, his relationships with his group are 100 out of 100, best of the best. But then you've got people on the other side. I mean, he did try obviously to bring them in, but then there are people on the other side who will see him as the enemy. Or are you kind of working with everyone, but then have you sacrificed relationships to do it? I mean, the best players, again, can do all of it. But I think most normal people have to make some sacrifices along the way, whether that is to how they're perceived or to their relationship.
Yeah, I think my analogy for it has always been social game is making money and strategic game is spending money.
Yeah.
So it's like you need to build that up. Like, you need to have the relationships. And if you plan on burning people along the way, like, you need to have the social capital to be able to invest in that. Like, because if you make a bad move and it doesn't pull off, and all of a sudden you're left with like zero social capital, then you just become this pariah, basically. Whereas if you're this person that's built it up the whole time, then all of a sudden you're just the person who made a mistake. And that's sort of the reason why immediately when I got into trouble in All Stars, I was sort of doing things to really just cement my position and say sorry, basically.
Yeah, well, we had a podcast about, you know, it was your deep dive. We spoke a lot about the jury, you being a 2-time juror, you know, in such quick succession, the first and the last juror, or the second and the last juror. I can't forget about Lockie. He was literally the bachelor, but you were on the other side of it. And I encourage everyone to check out that podcast, because it's a lot of a similar discussion as this, but, you know, focus on the jury. But this, I think, is really key to that final tribal council. So in like your position as a juror, how did this influence the way you were thinking about it?
Well, the way I see it is, if your identity matches up with the perception of that group, then you're probably going to win. And if your identity, like, to yourself that you're giving off or trying to give off has a sort of dissonance with the perception of everyone else of your identity, then you're going to lose. And I think Sean and Baden are really good examples, because there was a definite dissonance between what the jury was thinking and what they were thinking of themselves. And, like, that's not even necessarily saying that people had lied or people were fake. It's just the perception.
They weren't aware, though. I think that's what it is. They didn't have good awareness of how they were perceived.
Yeah. And so it's like someone like Baden, like, me watching him through the game, I was definitely confused when I got to Jury Villa. And all of a sudden, like, the things that I thought, like, other people didn't. And, like, the same for Pia. Like, there was, like, this idea that, like, there was sort of like weaker gameplay. And for me, someone who spent a lot of time around both those two, I was a little bit confused by that, like, because I was sort of going into this different environment where I'd been out of it for, what, 2 weeks or something. So it's the jury is this active thing, and I think you really, really need to have an awareness of the identity that's being built at Jury Villa about you. And when you get to that final tribal council, you're going to either have to have a massive uphill battle against it, or you just need to lean into it and own it like 1,000%. And so I think for Baden, he couldn't quite own it in the correct manner. And I think that's what cost him, basically.
Well, I mean, I would say that that's the identity side of it. The relationship side, I would think, usually supersedes identity, in that if you have a great relationship with someone, you know, the same way that, like, that Mo voted for Sean because they have that friendship. You know, Jeremy votes for Nat, like Parvati votes for Nat in Windows at War. Like, we saw all of that. I think we see it often where people are confused or even angry about jury votes that they think are going to a worse player. And that juror would say to you, like, I agree with that, you know, the eventual winner's perception that they were an excellent player, that Tony was a wonderful player, but I'm going to vote for Nat if I'm Jeremy, who's the godmother of my child. And I think a lot of the time relationships supersede that identity, that like very individual personal thing. But then you voted for Pia, and I would say you were much closer with Baden.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm a bad example because I think so too,
because you're like the exception that's proving my rule right now. Like, usually relationships really, because I feel like often people are like, they just like them better, and then fans get angry at that. But I've always felt that's really valid. But you didn't do it.
Yeah, I think I'm quite objective in my view. So I think I'm a bad example, but you're right. Like, there's definitely a huge thing where relationships and how much people are liked can actually affect things. It's definitely the case. Like, a lot of people hate that about Survivor, but you're definitely not experiencing that 39-day or 50-day bond when you're sitting on the couch. So it's really difficult to actually articulate that you end up being friends with these people and you really want to give them $500,000.
Yeah. I mean, if my best friend, I've always said, like, if my best friend was on Survive with me, like, I can't imagine anyone I would meet 50 days earlier, you know, voting for them over her. Like, and often in all-star games, like, that's when it comes up because there are these weird votes, but it's just down to those like really personal relationships that we can't understand because they're like, they're very real.
Yeah. I think the thing about that though, is when you think about identity, like, identity is perception. And if you've got the relationship built, then people aren't going to see you as a goat. People aren't going to see you as this crap player just because they like you. And that can change everything. Is like, if someone likes you, like, they'll defend you, they'll not see you in that way. And I think that is the reality, is that you build the relationship so that your identity benefits, basically. What's a good example for it? I think, like, David is a good example because, yes, he built the relationships, but he only really built them enough so that people wouldn't have any negative opinions, essentially. Like, he played the same way in a lot of ways as Mo and Sean. Like, obviously there's some bigger things where he, like, made some bigger moves and stuff like that. But in quite a lot of ways, the people that were meeting up from Vakamar, he'd basically just had a reasonable relationship. I mean, when you look at the early Vakamar, he was doing what he wanted. Like, he wasn't helping them. Like, he was voting out Jericho because he wanted to and, like, convincing them. And then he got rid of Daisy because he wanted to. Like, he wasn't helping any of them. And they still came in to merge with enough to sort of respect that and not see it as him just being this horrible backstabber.
And I think the way that we talked about passive gameplay being based on who you are as a person and your demographic and not being able to be fully accountable to that sometimes because there's nothing you can control. Like, I also think the way we've often spoken about how some demographics are disadvantaged at a final tribal council, how perception can be really skewed, works in here to identity, you know, here as well in the section.
Yeah, and this is where, like, the gender and culture and that sort of thing can really come into play, because like there's always been the discussion of like, is a strong woman a bitch or are they just a strong player? Like, and that comes up all the time. And that's the thing that like women kind of have to get around with their identity. And so I guess you have to have this sort of active social game where you really work against that. Like you're going to have to put extra effort in to sort of make sure that that perception is not reality. Like people have seen you do all these other things and they think to themselves, oh no, like she's not a bitch. She's done this just to be a hard player. And is that fair? Like probably not, but nothing in Survivor is fair. I don't think people should ever play the game of Survivor assuming it's going to be fair, because it's not. Every single thing is unfair about Survivor.
Yeah, it's skewed in different ways. And I do think, yeah, like, yeah, it makes you work that much harder. The same way that you can't necessarily be passive if you don't fit in. This is the same way that you can't necessarily rest on a great identity and will have to work harder at that identity or really invest in some relationships. Because the way that I see this is like the relationship side of this, I still think, no matter what you did with Baden, couldn't throw Baden one vote anyway, it will take you further, but in a smaller way. So like, I think that the strongest relationship will overcome the strongest identity. And I think that because I just saw it, like, I think the strongest relationship in Winners at War with Jeremy and Nat, two people who are like literally like siblings, that as Natalie said, it's blood with Jeremy. And I think the best game ever played was Tony's, and their relationship won out over Jeremy voting for that game, which I totally respect. But it's just one vote. And I think that's what's really hard is like, if you're going to win the jury vote based on relationships, you'd have to have like that good a relationship with so many people, you know, the same way that Sean gets that one vote from Mo, but you'd have to have that deeper connection with so many people to override like the incredible identity in game that David generated. And so that's really difficult. And so I think that, you know, you it is kind of that balance of having those extremely good relationships where you will get a couple of votes over anything, over anyone, over any game, just based on a brilliant relationship. But to get a majority of votes in what is becoming increasingly bigger juries, you need people to see you in that better way. And what's interesting about it is the fact that the juries keep getting bigger, because like Wendell and Dom is a big one where a lot of the people who, you know, the first five jurors, so the last five people voted out, all voted for Wendell. They had the great personal relationships with him built over time. Whereas the last five jurors who were voted out longer ago, they saw Dom's gameplay from the jury bench and they were impressed with that identity aspect of it, which ended up causing a tie. And then his deep, deep, deep relationship with Laurel that he had cultivated and played an idol with her and everything won him the game. And I think that was probably a pretty big indication of strong identity versus strong relationships. And it ended up in a tie. So that was an interesting case study.
Yeah, that actually is like a fantastic example of this, because I think no one really questions the idea that Wendell had this amazing social game, like very empathetic, very sort of friendly, down to earth. Like I think he just really made everyone around him feel quite comfortable, whereas Dom had this more like godfather sort of figurehead type thing to him that just, it really brings in a lot of respect, I guess, just naturally. Like he's just passively being himself, but like he just has this weight to his personality that just collects respect. And again, that goes back to not really being a fair thing. Like it's just the way people look at him and listen to him, but it pulls weight. Like you're doing the same moves as someone else and you're being perceived differently for it.
Yeah. And some of that is his innate ability that you have to respect, that he kind of has that gravitas that people will be drawn to and will look at impressively. Tony had some of that in Winners at War. Like he had people voting for him who'd never met him. Because it was just that impressive to watch. And that was pure identity. Like it could not be relationships because he never met Danny and she voted for him. And with these huge juries, I do think, unfortunately, that identity is going to become bigger and bigger and start overpowering relationships, because relationships are a lot of work, you know, and those deep connections and very individual and a lot of like very personal work, but only gets you that one vote. And that used to mean more when juries were seven people. Like Wendell would have won, you know, before it had to go to a tie. Like he did win, but he wouldn't have even gone to a tie had the jury not been 10 people. But now we have these 10 person juries and like it just keeps getting bigger. So I think identity is going to get even more important.
Well, I think I disagree with you a little bit, because I think while the American one is going to start leaning more and more heavily into identity, because American one is feeling less and less emotional and more and more just a game, whereas the Australian one, I think, still has a lot of emotion tied in.
But you didn't even vote for Baden. Like, you
well, poor Baden. But see, you're underestimating my connection with Pia.
Yeah, that's fair.
I didn't see it.
It's hard to see the personal relationship.
Yeah, it is hard to see the social thing.
They didn't get mad about the votes because they haven't seen those personal relationships.
And I spent the same amount of time with Pia and Baden because I spent my first 2 weeks on Contenders Beach, but then I spent the middle 2 weeks with Pia. So I actually had the same amount of time with both of them. And so I guess that was part of why for me it wasn't really a personal thing because I felt connected to both of them. And I still think I'm friends with both of them. I don't care what they say. I'm still friends with them. So I think people underestimate how close I was to Pia.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am looking at it from a US lens, but, like, it's true because in the big moves era of US Survivor, identity is just becoming that much more important. Like, people voted for Ben to win, who I think, like, actively didn't like him at that point. But they were just like, he got it done, he played the idols, and, like, that's enough to have my vote. Like, that would never happen in Old School Survivor. I feel like Old School Survivor was, like, very much like, people were asking at Final Tribal Council, like, can you tell me my kids' names? And I feel like that was more crucial than in US Survivor. Yeah. And I think Australian Survivor should have a better handle on that going forward.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think David is a little bit of an outlier, and he's partly an outlier because he played this amazing social game they didn't fully show. But I think, like, you look at Pia was purely, like, this strategic, social sort of, like, gameplay. You look at Shane Gould, it's, like, huge social. Jericho was even sort of just, like, a little bit under the radar. I see the future of Australian Survivor being very much subtle gameplay, social gameplay, players that are just going to get smarter and smarter about things. So I foresee it being maybe even a little bit more like New Zealand. Like, to me, New Zealand season 2 was just heaps of subtlety, quite a lot of emotion attached. And I foresee that being Australian Survivor in the future, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I think, Americans are known to be a little OTT. And I think it's definitely seeped into Survivor where it's like big moves all the time. And like a lot of these really great social things that we're talking about are kind of falling by the wayside anyway to like the big idol players and everything like that and the way that things are perceived. But I definitely think in Australian Survivor, like so much of this in a 50-day game is like probably the most relevant facet of the game. And, you know, you don't need to necessarily find an idol in Australian Survivor the same way you do in the US to have success. Like social gameplay really does win out a lot of the time.
I think it will. Like the 50 days, like people really underestimate how big a deal that is. There's huge times where you can just be chill, you can be passive, you can kind of go with the flow. There's a lot of time to get to know people. Like even if you're not on the same beach as them for a long time, you're seeing them for heaps of challenges. You get to sort of like pick up their demeanor. That's something that people don't understand a lot as well. It's like even before you meet someone, you can get your own opinions of them because you see them a lot of days at challenges and that sort of thing. So in the Australian one, I think relationships will be something that continues to be dead even with identity and straight up gameplay. And to me, the perfect player is someone that takes these four dualities and just sort of plays the middle of all of them.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about Australian Survivor, like, I think that in a little bit of a way, it's, like, the only thing you can fully fall back on because, like, the strategic side, like, and that's, like, really voting for people and, like, those moves and playing idols and everything around Tribal Council sometimes comes back at you and it's, like, it's no one's going home. So that's something that can kind of fall out from under you. Like, the challenges are something that are, you know, anyway quite versatile, but you know, even sometimes it's for rewards. You don't care about everything like that. Like, what can you count on other than yourself just playing brilliantly socially for 50 days? Like, that's something that'll never come back to bite you. And that's, like, I think, like, the most consistent trait that you need in Australian Survivor that is that long, that is sometimes kind of playing with the format and the structure. Like, the only thing you can rely on is, like, the way that you are being perceived by and, like, interaction with other people.
Yeah, it's the one thing that has huge certainty is social game. Like everything else, the like production can muck up your plans, they could put in a twist, they could be twisted a challenge, they can be anything, but if you have that social gameplay, then you're not going to be in trouble at all. You can make yourself a big TV presence, like when you're doing your little things away from the group, and you can have that great social game, make it to the end, win Survivor.
Mm. I mean, I think that a lot of this, like some of it is like things you would kind of think about, but don't spend that much time thinking about it. Some of it is things that we've spoken about before, but maybe not in this much detail. Like, I'm just happy to kind of have a long discussion about the social game. And now next time someone says, like, they won because they had a good social game, like, hopefully someone can kind of pass that out into, and this is why. And it's very, like, it's very specific. It's not just, like, this vague thing. So I hope we've helped people in that. I hope someone, A, wins Survivor due to this by being the perfect middle ground and the perfect player, and B, also just will analyze the game differently. I hope we've done that.
Yeah, I hope people have, like, got a little bit out of this, and, like, if anything, maybe it'll start, like, a bigger conversation about getting specifics around social game.
Yeah. Okay, well, this has been super fun. Harry, where can people find you on social media and hit you up? You know, you might just message them out of the blue, like, I have all these thoughts, and we should make it into a podcast.
Yeah, if people want to message me, I'm Harry the Ice Cream Guy on Instagram, and you can send me a message anytime you like, especially if it's about Survivor. I'm more than happy to chat about Survivor.
I feel like I'm just constantly encouraging people to stalk you in a way that I don't intend. don't do that. No, you can message Harry to a degree about Survivor. Yeah. This is like not the first time I've done this. I'm so sorry.
Just like telling them to find me. No, that's cool. Like, join me on Instagram. I post about food and then I talk about Survivor. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to see if some discussion comes out from this.
And Harry's address is not. Well, I've had fun doing this, and I also, it's given me a bit of an idea that I'd love to kind of start, you know, because it's the off season, the interminable off season. I kind of want to start a bit of a game theory podcast around things like this, that we talk about these tools, we take them for granted, something like the social game. This is very much like the start of that series, and different moves and different strategies. So if anyone has any ideas of what you'd like to hear in terms of like drilling down like to extreme degrees on game theory, evolution of certain moves from an international Survivor perspective and in each franchise, whatever you want to hear, I would like to hear your thoughts on that. Because I think it could be a cool way to kind of get super strategic in the off season. And something like this is just fun to just think about Survivor for a while and evolve some ideas about it and just kind of get the discussion going. And hopefully people kind of continue it on from there. So you can follow me at Shannon Gaitz, G-A-I-T-Z on Instagram and Twitter. I actually have a lot going on this week in terms of podcasting. I did a Watching with Wiggler post-show recaps patron podcast last week where we just chatted for an hour. It was some deep stuff. So if you pay to be part of the patronage, $5, you can hear that. We also did a Christmas community podcast about Abba's Uncontrollable Christmas and regional holiday music, two Christmas episodes of Community.
Yeah. I love Community.
Yeah. Oh, me too. It's like my addiction, and I'm like in the middle of my rewatch. So we did that, and it was super, super fun. So that's available to everyone, but it is technically a Patreon podcast, but you can listen to it on the website. I tweeted about it. And then on Wednesday, I'm going on with Rob and Mike on the Outwit, Outplay, Outlist podcast, where they rank ridiculously random things. Like getting super specific, like this is the 7th month of the off season with no end in sight kind of specific. So we're going to do that and it's going to be ridiculous. That's a very much the opposite of where I'm trying to go with like the game theory stuff, which will be like, you know, very strategic. And theirs is just like hyper silly. So I'm doing that with them. Kind of a busy week. But yeah, Harry, this has been so much fun. Thank you for messaging me out of the blue and chatting to me about it.
Thank you for enabling me and allowing me to just sort of talk about this stuff and get it out of my brain and onto a podcast.
Thank you for enabling me when it's like the Survivor off season and I can do Survivor podcasts, like two Survivor podcasts in 2 days, one of which is ranking, I think it's like immunity necklaces that we're doing, and the other is like drilling down, like this is where I am in my life and there hasn't been Survivor on for 7 months.
You can't even tell.
Yeah, this is my life. Like it always will be. It doesn't need to be on the screen for it to be part of our daily lives.
It'll be back. Yes. We're just going to keep the faith.
Keep on keeping on. It's coming back. It's just a pause, guys. Just remember, Survivor's coming back. That's what I tell myself every day. It's like, this isn't life now. It's coming back.
Just have like a poster on the wall. It will be fine. Survivor's coming back.
I wish I was joking. Anyway, I hope you guys have enjoyed this. I hope that you got something out of it. Thank you again, Harry, for all of your insights into this. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor is
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans,
12 ordinary Australians,
16 New Zealanders,
Vincent Middle,
Kimberley Swammer,
£1 million,
Million
Euro,
Million
Rubli,
Tribe Spoke,
Scheibe Trockene,
Schiff,
Tribe Spoke.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.